1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the TSN draft expert, Craig Button. Craig, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm glad that you asked me, and I'm happy to be part of it.
That's excellent. That works well for all parties, then.
Yes.
Craig, let's start with the Oilers. They have the number one overall pick. You know, the consensus is that Nail Yakupov is the best player in this draft. And the Oilers say they're not going to be trading that pick. You know, are they going to take Yakupov, even though it appears that they need more help on defense?
Well, you know, it's a good question, but how I would respond to that is that while they may need more help on defense, an 18-year-old player isn't going to come in and help you in that area. They have some really good defensemen in the pipeline. David Musil, the first pick in the second round last year, Oscar Klefbom, first round pick last year, Martin Giernat, who ended up being a real steal in the middle rounds of the draft. Certainly Martin Marinson, a really good defenseman that brings some offensive ability. So, you know, to me, I look at the Edmonton Oilers and it's real simple for me. They're 3 or 4 years away at least from competing for any type of significant winning. And I'm talking about putting yourself in position to compete for the Stanley Cup. So, you know, to me, you have to draft the player that you feel is going to be best for your team and best for your team in 3 to 4 years' time, not what's going to potentially help you right today. And I really am a big believer that it's rare. It is rare in the National Hockey League to go to an 18-year-old draft and expect players to help your team immediately out of that draft. I can think of very few. I think of Jaromir Jagr. He went into a very good Pittsburgh Penguins team. He was a rare 18-year-old that went in and helped the team win, but they were a very different team. And there's not very many others. I mean, Trevor Linden, second overall pick, he went to Vancouver in 88. He was a really good, strong player for them. But there's not very many that go in and make a real significant dent in terms of winning. So for me, the Oilers got to take the player they think is going to be the best player. And forget about position and all that. If you want to take a defenseman, take a defenseman and celebrate it. But don't worry that you have three really good forwards or four really good forwards. Get the best players. You can always move around those players to fill what maybe needs in the future.
Craig, you said on TSN that, you know, if Matt Dumba's available for the Jets at number 9, you feel they should grab him. You're high on him, obviously, and many others are as well. You have him ranked 2 on Craigslist, just ahead of Morgan Riley. Why Dumba ahead of Riley?
Well, you know, one of the things, too, is and I try to emphasize this all the time, is that a lot of times we get hung up on the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The first thing I try to do is make sure that I have players in the right groupings. And as long as I have players in the right groupings, I mean, if you made an argument to me and said, hey, listen, here's why I think Morgan Riley should be the second pick, I'm not sure I could put up a worthy fight because they're that close. The differentiating thing for me when I do this, though, and, you know, I try to put myself in the position, okay, I have a pick now between these two guys. Who would I take? And having been in that position many times while working in the NHL, you know, I understand what goes into that. So when it comes down to, for me, in ranking Matthew ahead of Morgan, is that I think the physical element that Matthew brings to the game, that ability to impact the game in that regard, I think just gives him a slight advantage. And, you know, the one thing I love about Matt Dumba is the fact is that I think he can impact the game in just about every way, physically, offensively, defensively, shut down. He's a great leader. And keep in mind, too, guys, and you know, when I make the comment about, you know, Dumba being a great pick, obviously you hear a lot of people, oh, it's a great pick because you had him rated high. I can tell you this, that I think Derek Pouliot, who I have in the top 20, I'm not sure, I think he's a terrific player. And I think that Cody Ceci's a terrific player. And depending on what a team wants and how they want to fit him into their group and what fits for their group, you know, I'm never going to criticize that. Now, if they take somebody that, you know, is right off the charts, you're going to scratch your head and go, okay, where did that come from? But all in all, these managers, the scouting staff, they understand their own group. They spend a lot of time with the draft prospects trying to evaluate how a player could fit in with their own group, something that I certainly don't have the luxury of being able to do, but is really important. So, you know, again, that's why I like Dumba too, and I think it would be a terrific pick for the Winnipeg Jets if he ended up there at nine, but he's not the only guy that I think would be a terrific pick for the Winnipeg Jets.
Craig, Teuvo Teravainen is fifth on your list, on Craig's list, and you've had him up there for a while now. And, you know, from the highlights I've seen with, you know, Jokerit and, you know, playing for Finland in international play, to me, he reminds me a little bit of Saku Koivu. Now, I realize that might be a lofty comparison, but do you think, you know, that is a good comparison? And do you also have any concerns that he's too small in this day and age to play in the NHL, or are guys like Steven Gionta continuously proving us wrong with that?
Well, you know what? I don't think that that's too lofty. I mean, I saw Saku play at that age. And I'll be honest with you guys. I compare him, and I'm going to say this, and I'll tell you guys this right now. I think that Teuvo Teravainen might be every bit as good as Ryan Nugent-Hopkins in terms of his playmaking and his vision. And I have no problem with – he's 5'11", 165 pounds. I have no problem with it because – nobody ever hits him. Nobody gets the puck from him. Nobody knocks him a stride or off of what he wants to do. And the ultimate comparison that I've given him to is Russian great Igor Larionov. His poise, his patience with the puck, his ability to play at the highest tempo, and with everything around him seeming chaotic and busy, Teuvo is just able to settle everything down and sort it all out. And superb passer, superb vision, a competitor, and to me, he's going to mature in the next 2 or 3 years. And while Saku Koivu is a very, very strong comparison, when I use Igor Larionov, you know, I'm putting him in a category that's very unique. And certainly, if he ends up being Saku Koivu, you're going to be a very good National Hockey League player. But to me, I have no worries, zero worries. I'll tell you this. You know, if the Edmonton Oilers took him first overall, I wouldn't sit there. I would say, hey, listen, just because of what I told you, I see. I think at the same time, he might be as good as Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Wow. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Craig Button from TSN, talking the NHL entry draft. Craig, you know, we're moving from Finland to Sweden now. Philippe Forsberg is a guy that you have seventh overall. Other people have him ranked towards the top of the draft. Who would you compare him to as an NHLer?
Corey Perry. I think he's got he's not as chippy as Corey, but he's a better skater than Corey. But that same, like, he's got a great shot. He's a guy that can shoot the puck off the pass. He's a guy that can beat you one-on-one with a shot from 30 to 35 feet out. You know, he's hungry around the net. He wants to score. He's determined to score. He's got that will. He's got that determination to get in and engage in those hard areas and fight for pucks. And, you know, while he doesn't have that same, you know, that edge that that Corey has, his competitiveness is at the same high level as Corey in terms of scoring, in terms of not allowing himself to be denied. And I think that he's very unique in this draft. I don't think there's a lot of really good goal scorers in this draft. And I certainly think that Forsberg fits the description of one of the quality goal scorers in this draft.
Craig, Ryan Murray, you have at 13. You know, there's mixed reviews on maybe his upside. In your opinion, what is his ceiling? Like, if he gets to the level that the team that drafts him wants him to be at, what is that ceiling? Is it a number two defenseman? Is it maybe like a 1B, a 1A?
Yeah, you know, it's always a good question. Let me just kind of give you a quick description of what I see Ryan Murray as. I see Ryan Murray as a player that's going to play 15-plus years in the National Hockey League, and he's going to help your team win. And winning is the most important criteria. When I go and look at players, I always ask myself, can they help you win? And I don't have any question that Ryan Murray helps you win. And is there a lot of flash and dash to his game? No. But he's a player that's calm. He's poised. He's very, very smart on the ice. He's able to settle things down. And winning teams have players like that. And to me, at the very least, I compare him to Dan Hanses. That's the guy that I've compared Ryan Murray to. And, you know what, in the last little while, I've been reminded by a couple of people, you know, that may be the very least he'll be. So what is his ceiling? I don't know. But I just see that player that is going to get the puck moving out of your own zone. He's not going to allow you to be in trouble in your own zone. He's going to move the puck forward. He's going to be able to play in those defensive situations, be real dependable, probably chip in 30 to 35 points because he's so smart. But a guy that's a leader, a guy that that through his actions, through his competitiveness, is a leader. And Carl, I think, you know, again, and I go back to 13, well, I think that the players ahead of him, you know, might have a little bit more than him. You know what? I've compared him to Trevor Linden back in 1988. Trevor Linden wasn't the best player selected in that draft at two. Timo Solani was better than him. Rod Brind'Amour was better than him. But Trevor Linden, two Memorial Cups. He was a leader. He went into Vancouver and he changed their fortunes. And he was such a good pick for the Vancouver Canucks. I feel the same way about Ryan Murray. I mean, if the Edmonton Oilers take him first overall, I think it'll be a really good pick for them. But at the same time, they have to say this is the guy we want, and not make it out to be like it's a default position or it's something. Oh, well, we needed a defenseman. Draft Ryan Murray because that's the guy you want that thinks he's going to help you win.
You know, your description, Craig, kind of reminds me of a left-handed shooting WHL defenseman who was first overall and played for 15 years, and like Chris Phillips.
Well, that's a good description, but I think he's got a little bit more offensive ability than Chris does at the NHL level, and that's why I compare him to Dan Hamhuis, right? But again, like, does Chris Phillips help your team win? No question.
No question.
And those players are really, really important to a group. You can't just have one type of player. You know, I look at the Chicago Blackhawks, and one of the guys I underestimated him a little bit in his draft year, but, you know, thought he was a good, solid player. But I remember Brad McCrimmon, the late Brad McCrimmon, coming back. He was an assistant coach with the under-18 team that year. And he came back and he said, Craig, he goes, this Brent Seabrook, I'm telling you, is going to be a really good player in the National Hockey League. He's not going to be great. He's going to be a really good player. And, you know, I remember clearly Brad telling me that. And, you know, that's exactly what Brent Seabrook has been. And gold medalist for the Team Canada at the Olympics, Stanley Cup. You know, he won the World Under-18 tournament that year. I mean, he's a guy that is so important to winning. And you need all different types to build your team out.
Quarter past the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Craig Button of TSN breaking down the NHL draft.
Craig, for a while now, people have been gushing over Mikhail Gregorenko, and some people have him ranked very high on their list. Some people have him in the top two or three. But there are some concerns about his attitude, you know, playing for Quebec in the QMJHL. You know, how big of a concern is that for you and maybe from other people you've talked to, you know, in regards to his attitude?
Yeah. Well, I can only tell you this, and, you know, I've been asked lots of questions about Michael, and for me, I don't have him 20 because of his attitude. I think he's a terrific young man. I think he's well-spoken. I think, you know, he's from a city that's 30 kilometers from the Chinese border. For him to come all the way over to North America, playing in Quebec, away from his family, his friends, his culture, his English is very, very good.
Yep.
He's worked hard to gain a mastery of the English language. And I think he had a really good year. And I've watched him for 2 years now and seen him lots. And you always go in when you're evaluating players with questions, and then you're trying to find answers to them. And you watch this guy with this great skating stride and really good playmaking capabilities, and you try to piece it together. And what I've come to in my own mind is that I think Michael's going to be a good player. I think he's going to be just a real good player. I don't think he's going to be a great player. I don't see him as an elite centerman in the National Hockey League. That being said, if a team does see him as that type of player, you better take him early because those guys, you know, don't last very long. But for me, I think that a lot of it has come down to, you know, the playoffs. He didn't have a great playoff, specifically against the Halifax Mooseheads. They were up 3-0. Halifax came back and beat them 4 straight. You know, we find out now that he had mononucleosis, but long before that, I felt that Michael was a guy that, you know, while you become enamored with all these with all these skills, obvious skills, you know, you're trying to piece together what the player will be. And, you know, and I don't want this to come across as negative, but, the same similar thing happened with Chad Kilgour in his draft year. And I remember him in his draft year, that big 6'4" centerman that could skate. He put up lots of points. And everybody's thinking, oh, wow, this is the guy. I think Chad went fourth overall. He wasn't that guy. He was a good, solid player. And quite frankly, I think Michael is going to be better than Chad was at the NHL level, but I don't think he's going to be that number one center. Time will tell.
Craig, if Galchenyuk, Teravainen, and Forsberg are off the board at ninth overall when the Jets take their first selection, is there any forward that the Jets can take and not have it be considered a reach?
Yeah, I mean, I think Radek Faksa fits into that group. I mean, he's a big centerman, plays in Kitchener. I mean, one of the things that, you know, last year I really felt that when you looked at the Winnipeg Jets, when I look at it organizationally, it just seemed they had a real gaping hole in the middle of the ice. And, you know, they drafted Mark Scheifele, and there was a lot of centermen in the draft last year. And a lot of times what you got to do is not try to fit a square peg in a round hole. You know, this draft seems to offer up a whole lot of different type of defensemen. So sometimes you might just have to say, you know, this is this draft, and, you know, it's going to be a defenseman, you know, even though we might want a big right winger or whatnot. But if they do want to go the route of a forward and a centerman, I think Radek Faksa would be a really good, strong pick. I think he's a really good player. I have no doubt that he's going to be a really good, strong two-way centerman in the National Hockey League. And, you know, depending on where the Jets go, I mean, you start to look at it as, does he complement a Scheifele? Does he fit into the group of what they're trying to do? Because right now the Jets have some really good young dynamic centermen, I think. And then you add in Blake Wheeler and you add in Andrew Ladd, and they have the makings of having 7-8 forwards that really, really are going to create a lot of depth in their group and create challenges for opponents.
Last question, Craig. This has been an absolutely great interview, really insightful. Superstar potential. Some have been saying that this draft doesn't really have that superstar in it. If the players, you know, get close to what people project, even then they probably won't be a draft that has that one or two guys that become maybe Hall of Famers, but a continual All-Stars years and years and dominant forces. Do you agree with that assessment?
I do agree with that. And, a lot of times drafts get defined by that top end. And, you know, when a Stamkos comes along, you go, oh, yeah, okay, that's clearly the number one superstar. And Sidney Crosby comes along, it's the same thing. I don't think anybody was saying when Patrick Kane went first overall or Eric Johnson went first overall that those guys were superstars. And they certainly have shown that to be true. But are they good players? No question they're good players. But, you know, there's a real distinction between the first overall pick and star quality and superstar quality. And, you know, while some players might show, Claude Giroux, you know, he might be. I think he's showing that he's in that superstar category, but nobody knew that at the time. Could there be one or two or three guys in this draft? Yes, but I wouldn't label it like that right now. But I will say this, guys, next year, the first two guys right now competing for that first overall pick, Seth Jones and Nathan MacKinnon, I'll put them in the superstar category.
Well, next year at this time, we'll talk about them. Craig Button from TSN, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And Friday night can't be here soon enough, and we'll have everything covered on with the NHL hockey draft.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Thanks again, Craig.
Thank you, Craig.
Yeah.
Reminder, first round of the NHL draft available here on TSN 1290 Friday night. Gary Lawless, Hustler, Brian Munns down in Pittsburgh. I'm here anchoring.
You're quarterback.
I'm quarterback.
Craig, look at Drew, the big shot.
Craig Budden. Great insight.
Great insight.
He said just from the beginning till now, draft insight that he's given us. And I like how he gives his opinion. Yep. Some people say, oh, people are saying that his opinion.
That's right.
And he's seen them firsthand, his opinion. I think that's great. I'm very much looking forward to Friday. Yep. I think there's not only going to be a lot of action, I think there's going to be a lot of trading of draft picks and trades, period.
Yep. That's right.
And I think that, you know, clearer picture in the cap. It's an exciting time, especially for the Jets now getting back into the groove. It's been kind of quiet for the Winnipeg Jets for a while here now. And I think Craig Button will certainly take care of the fine folks on Friday night.
Yeah, that's right. Friday night, the draft special here on TSN 1290. Saturday morning, a special edition of Hustler and Lawless with Brian Munns live from the draft floor in Pittsburgh. And then us Saturday afternoon to round off the coverage. And we have you covered. Our scouting correspondent, Kyle Kozier, will be down in Pittsburgh for the NHL draft. Let's go to break. We're way over time. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Grant Saunier coming up at 1:30. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We just heard from Craig Button of TSN. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
Are you real right now? You just slid into your chair.
I was using the washroom. Richard was in there for 5 minutes. Well, I'm not sure what you were doing.
Timmy told you had a minute to go to the bathroom, and that basically means you don't have enough time. So Richie was going to come back, and then you slid in here. I mean, you're good.
I'm a professional. Don't think I have an internal clock in my head?
You're good.
That knows how much time I have?
You looked at us panicked when you walked in, Drew.
I panicked, please.
Ooh, the Washington game's up on
panic. Don't be ridiculous. Anyways, coming up in a couple minutes' time, we're going to be joined by ESPN's draft expert, Grant Saunier.
Drew, I'd like to say something, because we've had Craig Button on 4 or 5 times, and it really is a pleasure to have him on. Just expand on what Richie said, and he does provide a lot of good insight. And, as far as these rankings go and these mock drafts, and I should mention now that we are going to do a mock draft with Kyle Kozier later in the show, but these
are we?
We're going to be something similar to that.
The show plan?
Richard never reads the show plan.
The show plan. We're doing a mock draft.
I know. I wrote the show plan.
Okay, so people should keep in mind that these rankings are not a mock draft.
No.
So when Craig Button has a guy like Grigorenko, and he mentioned this at 20, that's his evaluation of who he thinks is the best player. And, it's funny, he mentioned Radek Faxon. That's a guy that I was talking to Richie about before. The Jets need a guy, a number one and number two center. And he's the type of guy that, he might not be number one, but he's the type of guy that has offensive skill and had a really good year with Kitchener. I think it's a good point. The draft, it's not so much about superstars. And, this might be a weaker draft. But the problem is, a team is always supposed to be drafting the best player, not at the position, but the best player for them.
Well, that's not necessarily true. That's not necessarily true. Lots of teams might. I mean, there's two different philosophies. Do you take the best player available, or do you take a guy that fits your need?
The problem is, you might be taking a player that's, weaker in the overall pool. And I don't think you're ever going to go wrong by identifying a player that you like and drafting that player.
Best player. Period. Especially the Jets. They have too many needs to do anything.
I agree with you, especially because most of these guys are going to make an impact a couple years down the road from now. I think the Jets should definitely take the best player available to them. But that's an argument that I'm sure is being had in the Edmonton Oilers offices.
You can never have enough good forwards.
Well, if I was the Oilers, I would take Yakupov and not think twice about it.
Absolutely.
But, especially in a salary cap era, you have to think, if I have to pay all these guys at some point, am I ever going to be able to do that?
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, as Craig said, and I agree with that. I mean, you have four amazing forwards, so you have four amazing forwards. If you have to trade one eventually, might as well trade him when he's proven himself to be a 60, 70, 80-point guy than now, when people still aren't sure exactly what he's going to be.
I agree with you. I mean, you won't get an argument. You won't get an argument out of me if they take Yakupov. I think, in fact, they would be listening to too many. I mean, the Oilers are not about to contend for a Stanley Cup playoff spot. It's not like Ryan Murray or Matthew Dumba or Morgan Rielly is going to be the answer to their question as to why they haven't been a Stanley Cup team.
Craig also said this exactly right. No, we have to go to break here. But, that defenseman won't make the difference now anyways. He's an 18-year-old defenseman. Defense is hard to position. Defense and goaltender are harder to come into the NHL and make a difference right away than forwards because the pressure and your mistakes are easier to identify. For example, we talked about it many times last year. If a couple of goals last year, more than a couple. The forechecker or the neutral zone play the third line and the fourth line, and the center doesn't do what he's supposed to do, and the winger doesn't get where he's supposed to get. Really, nobody notices. And then the defenseman gets burnt or doesn't make a play. Everybody notices. So that pressure, there's a pressure that comes along with playing National Hockey League defense and goaltending, and forwards can generally get away with that.
If the Oilers insist on taking an NHL-ready player, a defenseman, the probably the most ready defenseman is Cody Ceci. But they're not going to take him first overall.
And
that's why they should take Yakupov instead.
He's the best player, and apparently he's the best player.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Grant Saunier from ESPN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the ESPN draft expert, Grant Sonier. Thanks very much. Messier?
Just like Mark Messier, boys, but not nearly as good.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon, Grant.
Thanks for having me. I saw the lineup. I see. I believe I'm following Craig Button. That's a tough fact to follow. I see Craig at a lot of the games, and I know he would have had lots of good insight. So I hope I can follow him up. I'm sure he was quite good.
He was, and we have no doubts whatsoever that you're also going to be good. Grant, let's start. I mean, you worked in the Thrasher scouting department as recently as 2010, 2011, before the team came up to Winnipeg. You know, much of the same scouting staff is still in place. What attributes does that staff place a high value on?
Well, they're like a lot of staffs. I've been fortunate to work with a lot of different teams. They have some great staff members there. I know Marcel Como comes over and becomes the director of scouting. He, along with Tavis McMillan and Mark Hillier, I was really close with those guys. They certainly will look for talent to be one of the things that they key in on. And I think in any draft, if you're not drafting talent, you're going to find yourself in trouble. The role players are always easier to find. Not that they're less important. Role players are very important, obvious, in today's game, but I think they'll look to draft talent, and I know the character is high on their chart. So those two things will be front and center with them, I'm sure.
Grant, when you mention, you know, character and talent, is there, you know, you talk about hockey sense or speed or you know, I guess that's within the talent umbrella or underneath the talent umbrella, and you talk about characters. Is there one thing that's, you know, if you had to rank them 1-2, 1-2-3? How would it kind of be done based on your experience with the staff?
Well, that's a really tough question. I've been posed the question before, and we used the scenario: if you had six chips, and you had hockey sense, character, mm-hmm. and skating/talent as your three areas, how would you divide your chips? Some people would give them 2-2-2.
Right.
Personally, I would give three chips to character, two to hockey sense, and one to the skating and the skill side of it. And the reason I say that is you can be the best skater in the world, but if you don't work hard and have character, you'll have a hard time playing in the NHL. If you have hockey sense, but you don't work hard, you're going to have a hard time playing in the National Hockey League. I think if you're just a skater and you just have talent, we've seen lots of those players get drafted really high and they have a hard time playing. So character for me ranks as the number one characteristic that I look for in a player, and hockey sense is close behind it. And then obviously you have to be able to skate and you have to be able to have some skill to play in the league. But those are physical skills that in today's day and age, with the way training is, the way the equipment is, and the way the athletes can improve in those areas, I think they can get to a point where they're adequate. But if you don't have hockey sense and you don't have character, it's really hard to teach it.
Grant, we were having this conversation before you came on in the last segment about, you know, different teams' philosophy and should they take the best player available, or, you know, should they be basically picking based on their needs. Was it always the best player available, or was it more based upon the organizational needs as far as the Thrashers organization went?
Well, I think best available player, but under a team focus. I know when I worked with Rick Dudley in Tampa back when they were the worst team in the National Hockey League, they were a small team, and our focus was to get bigger and faster at that time. So size-speed ratio was something we focused on, and then as we drafted Nikita Alexiev, and we learn as we go. You know, people say he was a bust. Well, he was. He didn't play nearly as much as he should have based on where he was drafted, but the asterisk there being he had two knee surgeries and a shoulder surgery, so you throw it out the window.
Right.
And we all have skeletons as scouts where we've drafted players we wished we would have had drafted other people, and if we had crystal balls, you wouldn't need scouts, obviously. But I think it's always been, for me, the best player available under the team umbrella.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Grant Saunier. He's the ESPN draft expert. You can read his work at ESPNinsider.com. Grant, when you look at your rankings, you have Philippe Forsberg ranked higher on your list than many of the top defensemen that are expected to go, Dumba, Murray, et cetera, et cetera. What is it about Forsberg that has you ranking him so high?
I just, among his peer, among his age group, he's been a dominant player for me. I've really, really liked what I've seen in him, not only as an underage, but this year had the opportunity to see him lots and went at the end of the year and saw him at the under-18 championships. Philip Forsberg plays in the Al Svensson League, which is the men's league in Leksand. Mm-hmm. And like most young players, once in a while a young player will play in the men's league and is afforded all kinds of opportunity. First power play with the best players. Not the case with Philip Forsberg, and not a very good team in Leksand either. So if you watch him in that environment, you may have a tendency not to like him nearly as much. But for me, no denying the fact that when he's playing against his own age group, he's a star. He's big. He really works hard. He finishes his checks. He's got all kinds of skill and talent and likes to shoot the puck. There's not a whole lot not to like about Philip Forsberg in my mind.
Grant, Grigorenko is a guy that you have rated highly. Now, people don't question whether or not he has the talent. I think that's, you know, everybody agrees that his talent level is extremely high. Why are maybe you have him ranked very high? Why are you maybe higher on him and don't maybe are disregarding a little bit of the questions about his character, maybe more so than some other people?
Well, I have him at 6, but that's a drop for me. I had him at 2 all year long.
Yeah.
Something about me I see so many different types of players in this player when I watch him, and there's no doubt. I mean, did he have mono? Did he not have mono? I don't know. If he did, there's no doubt that's hard to play under those conditions. He's got some laziness to him, and he's got the Russian passport issue going with him, and all those things. For all those reasons, I slot him down a little bit, and I've seen him play some very ordinary games, and when I think of a kid with that size and his ability, how could he go out and have a mediocre or less than mediocre game when he's playing against his peers? But I've written this, and I'll say this, and I'll stick to this. His best shift is as good as anybody in this draft, and I would hold that up against anybody, and I really mean that. Now, he didn't have the consistency that other people have had, thus he falls, and he's 6 on my list. But the NFL motto is if they can do it once, they can do it all the time. If you ever put that motto into the NHL draft, this kid could go number one if that's the case, because he really is a special player. I see he's a better skating Sean Couturier. He has similar ways in which he goes around the ice and anticipates. He dangles the puck out for people to try and take it from him and pulls it back like a Jason Spezza. But he's missing some of the things that you really need in the player. And when I rate character as the number one component, then he falls down for me. But I would not be surprised if this kid plays in the NHL next year. And playing with NHL players, the one thing he has is big-time hockey sense and the ability to find the open man. And if you put him on the ice with NHL players, I would not be surprised if he's playing in the NHL next year.
Grant, you've got Morgan Riley of the Moose Jaw Warriors currently ranked at 10, and you've had him ranked in the top 5 before at number 5, and some people think he might even go top 3. Why do you have him dropping on your particular list?
I'd like to say it's because of something I've seen, but it wasn't. I lack some viewings on him with his injuries, and I couldn't get out west to see him late in the year. I love this kid as an underage. He was so good in Kermishaw and Dresden the year before in Germany at the under-18s as an underage player. I saw him early in the season, right at the beginning of the season. Then he got hurt, and I just didn't see him again. So it's a real tough slotting for me. I think whoever drafts this kid is going to be really happy with him. He's got just unbelievable character about him. He's got great poise on the ice. He has that ability to grab the puck and lift you right out of your seat, which is what you like in the top 10 picks in the draft. They should be able to get you excited. They should lift you out of the seat, and he can do that. And I think he's a player that's going to anchor a power play for some team in the NHL. And I think he's going to do all the things that run concurrent with young players that they have to do in order to get to the NHL. I don't have any doubt that this kid's going to do that. Testament to the way he came back from a major knee surgery this year and played in the playoffs.
I'm not sure about the pronunciation here, Grant. Is it Olli Maatta? Is that how it's pronounced?
Olli Maatta, yeah.
Olli Maatta. He shot up your rankings from 28 to 14. Can you tell our listeners why that is?
I saw a big kid that lumbered around the ice that was really, really smart and highly competitive. So I thought, he's a defensive defenseman for sure because he's smart and really competes. His feet have improved over the course of the year. And from Christmas on, his offensive ability has really shot through the roof. I still am going to be hesitant to say that he's going to be an offensive defenseman, but he's contributed to the offense in London. He had a great playoff run. He's answered all the questions of those European kids that have come over. And some of them plateau and they level off. Well, he's continued to improve and improve and improve. And because of that, I give him that bump on my rankings. And I will say that I believe he'll play in the NHL. I believe he plays in the NHL at the very least as a defensive defenseman because he's really, really smart and competitive, as I said. And if the offense continues, then he could be a really good player for someone in this draft.
Grant, we'll let you go on this last question. You have to go all the way down to number 35 to find your first goaltender. That's Malcolm Subban.
Second goaltender.
Pardon me, second goaltender?
Vasiliev is number one.
Yeah, pardon me. Malcolm Subban over at number 35.
Pardon me, Vasilevsky.
He's 20. Vasilevsky's 27, and he's got Subban 35.
Right, Subban is 35. Exactly right. Is that a function of him not having the highest skill set or just the lack of goaltenders being drafted really high in the first round?
Yeah, it certainly has nothing to do with skill set. Malcolm Subban might be the best athlete in the whole draft. He's a phenomenal athletic kid that battles and shows great upside. My years of experience in doing this and I'll angle it towards Kevin Gilmore and Dave Taylor when I work with them in LA, I like to think we did a great job of drafting. After they let go and I was still with the Dean Lombardi group, we took Jonathan Bernier in the first round. And statistically, we had information when I worked with LA to say that it's not a good idea to take goaltenders in the first round. Now, the Montreal Canadiens would argue, obviously, Carey Price was a great pick. And there are exceptions to it, but the goaltender drafted in the first round is usually playing for another team by the time they get to the NHL. It has nothing to do with Malcolm Subban being not a good prospect. I actually have Oscar Dansk ahead of him at 34, so he's my third goaltender. I just like the size of the other two goaltenders. I think Malcolm Subban easily could be picked higher than I have him on the list. It's not that he's small. He's 6'1". He's got great athletic ability. He only began the position, I think, at the age of 13 or 14. So his learning curve is as steep as anybody's, and he could end up being the best goaltender in this draft. I wouldn't be surprised. But my goaltenders are lower on the list for that reason. Statistically, that would tell you that it's tough to draft goaltenders high in the first round, period.
One other question, Grant, if you don't mind.
No problem, guys. I got all afternoon.
Thrasher's obviously.
How many questions did you ask Craig? Just ask one more than that.
we have the Thrasher's obviously, drafting Barry players, or it be Bermistrov, or whether it be Brian Little, and then last year the Jets drafting Scheifele and Ivan Telegin from the year prior to that. Tanner Pearson's a guy that people around here, if they follow Barry closely, they see that name a lot. This is actually his third time going through the draft, if I'm correct. Is that something that will be held against him, you think, by scouts and organizations?
No, I don't think so at all. I guess I would answer that in 3 years' time or in 4 years' time, and if he's playing for the Winnipeg Jets or any other NHL team, are you even looking at his age?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You're not even concerned about what his age is when he makes it to the NHL. I have him 40 on my list. I think every kid develops at a different age. Certain kids have certain pedigrees where they're afforded the opportunity to play on national teams. This kid played in his first Hockey Canada event this past winter at the World Junior Championships, and he was good. He was really good. He played a role. He was brought in to probably score more than he did, but he caught on late in the tournament and scored some. He really is a contagious type of player. He works hard. And he's a feel-good story, and there's nothing wrong with that. And the fact that he's been through the draft a couple of times doesn't bother me at all. I don't think it'll hurt him. I think people will try to slot him in there and evaluate him. The hard thing is he's already physically more developed than players, so you have to factor that into the equation.
Craig Sagne, ESPN.
Grant. Oh, there you go. Craig Sagne.
What?
Grant.
I'm looking at, you know, boy, something's wrong with me. I'm sorry, Grant. I'm going to be
Don't worry about it. I'm half a Craig and half a Sonia today, so you had both of us on, and I'm just happy to be on, guys. I appreciate you getting the ESPN insider stuff in there, and I don't know which of you guys are going to be at the draft, but if you're there, I look forward to meeting you.
We'll send our colleague Kyle Kozier, who's he's down in Minnesota most of the time. Well, he's going to be at the draft for us, so we'll tell him to look out for you.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, Grant. Thanks very much. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
Who sings this song? This is an oldie.
Yeah, this is
Tim, who is this?
This is the New Radicals.
Song.
It is a good song. Yeah. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly before 2 o'clock, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Not sure how much longer I'm going to be the host after my performance.
Drew, you will always be the host. There's no replacing you. If there's no you, there's no Illegal Curve. There's three of us, and there's Dave and Remus that are also involved. Obviously, Kyle. You can't replace any of us.
Yeah, Drew. You're all good.
This isn't a...
Thanks for the moral boost there.
Hey,
Anyways, welcome back to the show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by Kyle Kozier. He's our Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. He will be down in Pittsburgh at the draft starting on Friday. So we'll hear from him. You'll hear from him definitely on Saturday during our program as the last rounds of the NHL draft get underway.
You know, we talk about the show, and when we're talking about the NHL, obviously, on the show and hockey in general, this show in particular, we've learned a ton because we haven't seen these players play for the most part, if at all.
Right. Yep.
And so the past two guests we've had, Craig Button, Grant Sagne.
That's what these guys do.
Joe Sagne.
Yeah, I know.
I'm kidding, Craig. I'm kidding, Drew.
We actually need a pronunciation guide, not only for hockey players, but also scouts.
Yeah, exactly. No, but you know what?
Lousy English language. Boy, it's a hell of a language.
It's really Russian.
Really good insight, and we get an idea of their perspectives on the players, and that's what you love about the draft. And this is the draft for any league, really. Some guys, somebody two, some guys, somebody ten. It takes a while to figure it out.
Well, beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
And it is, and it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to talk to Corey.
I hope that's the case for me, Drew. Sorry to screw up your train of thought.
Sorry. Anyhow, man, you know what? Corey Pronman's going to have a different perspective as well, and we're going to ask Corey about some of the lower-ranked prospects and hopefully give the listener an idea of who's going 1 through 50.
Now, there's a couple things I wanted to mention, and in between Craig and Grant, we didn't have a lot of time. We had a quick segment there, but, you know, the draft is one of my favorite times of the year. Obviously, these days, in this day and age, hockey's all year round, especially for us. We're on the air all year round, and, you know, few people take a break in this business now, but, you know, the draft is a really fun time, and last year, Remus and I and Kyle were all down there, obviously, because we were able to take the drive down, and it was amazing with, you know, the announcement.
Didn't you sleep the whole ride, or is that Remus slept the whole ride?
No, I did because he drove.
Actually, they both slept, and the car just drove itself.
We put it on autopilot. But, you know, last year with Mark Chipman, you know, making the official announcement that it was going to be the Jets, and then Mark Scheifele and everything, and all the Jets fans, it was just unreal. But, you know, back to this year's draft, and, you know, the Jets have the 9th overall pick, and you know, I actually found it really interesting today. I don't know if you guys read this, but Ed Tate had an article in the Winnipeg Free Press about the 2007 draft. And actually, they didn't have a first or second rounder because of the Keith Tkachuk trade. I thought that was a great article, and you should definitely check that out. Hopefully,
that was a terrible trade at the time. Yeah, and it's a terrible trade now.
But in that draft, Richie, they drafted Spencer Mihajlovic, I believe, in the 3rd round.
Okay.
And they had Paul Postma in the 7th round. Now, those are right now, those are at the top of the Jets draft, prospects, along with Scheifele, Telegan.
Good picks,
So, I mean, you can't just look at the draft as who are the superstars and who's going to be the next Alexander Ovechkin. You got to think that, you know, these guys, 3 or 4 years from now, might be a decent player for the Winnipeg Jets. Spencer Mihajlovic, okay, he was a good player for the Vancouver Giants, but the draft isn't just about who the superstars are. And sure, you want a guy to be drafted to your team that's potentially going to be a top line forward or a number, you know, one or two defensemen. And, you know, that does happen. But there's also a lot of value in some of the later picks.
You mentioned superstars in the Vancouver Giants, and this isn't draft-related, but there's a lot of chatter on Twitter today. Ren Lavoie of RDS in Montreal tweeted out last night that he hears from a player on the Winnipeg Jets that Evander Kane doesn't want to negotiate a new deal with the team. And so a lot of people on Twitter are asking us our thoughts about that. First of all, we don't know. I mean, frankly, we'll be honest. We don't know if that's the case. I haven't heard that either.
I mean, whether it is or is not true, we should point out that Renan Lavoie is the same guy who said that Bob Hartley was going to be coach of the Habs.
That's right.
He's not batting 100% here.
No, exactly. So you can take it with a bit of a grain of salt, but I mean, people have been asking us about Twitter, our thoughts on that.
And Drew, there has been chatter throughout the year. Yeah. I mean, it's been talked about, but that he's maybe sun on happiness. In terms of the market size, blah, blah, blah. Whether that's the case or not, I think over the next little while we'll realize. Because once, you know, the draft's coming up here, guys, July 1st is coming up.
Right.
Then we talk about negotiating. Now, he doesn't have arbitration eligibility.
Right.
So his leverage is simple.
None.
Well, I've written about it. Demand a trade, sign an offer sheet,
or
sign
out.
With Jets. Or sit out.
I mean, he could sit out.
So those four options.
Yeah.
But sit out, I mean, sit out means no money.
Right. So he's not.
And demand trade could mean no money. So
well, demand a trade could easily, yeah.
And I would guess he probably values money more than where he plays. So let's just kind of wait and see.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm not putting that much stock into that report. I mean, you hear things, but you hear things, and they're all just speculative, and it's all just hearsay.
And you know, we talked about him on the show many times. And we talked about where he scores from. We talked about his value in contracts and things like that. This is a valuable commodity, whether he plays for your team or not.
Would anybody? I mean, I would be shocked if Evander Kane is not in a Winnipeg Jets lineup whenever the season starts.
Right.
I wouldn't be shocked.
You wouldn't be shocked?
I wouldn't be shocked. I would be pretty surprised, but I wouldn't be shocked. I think there's a distinction there, frankly.
I think there's a distinction, too. I would be shocked. I mean, you don't get these guys who look like they're going to be 40 goal scorers that they just don't come around that often.
I agree.
So, I mean, you know.
But I've written about it, the talent-wise. It doesn't necessarily mean his character fits into the organizational framework moving forward. And we'll see. But I just don't think. The only thing there is this. You can't trade him for 50 cents on the dollar. That's right. The only thing.
And I don't know what team would how you can get full value for him.
Well, you're looking at a straight exchange of young, talented players.
I mean, short of trading him to Edmonton for one of their top, one of their top three guys. You know, pick an NHLer who's got the same value.
I don't want to start rumoring, but you're talking about deals that are like for guys like Bobby Ryan and things like that.
Right.
I mean, that's the kind of thing you're talking about. That type of player.
Right.
Okay.
And how often do those deals happen? Not very often.
They don't happen very often. That's exactly right.
I mean, the last time it happened in baseball, let's take, was the one in the offseason where Michael Pineda went from Seattle to the Yankees for Jesus Montero.
Yeah.
And that didn't work out for the Yankees because Pineda's injured.
Yeah, those are risky moves.
Yeah.
Because
or Remus just typed in Hossa for Heatley. That's another reasonable example.
Very rare.
Granted, there was extenuating circumstances there with the whole Dan Snyder tragedy involved.
That's right. Good point.
So it doesn't often happen, and I for one would be surprised, shocked. Is what I said. I'd be shocked if Evander Kane's not a Winnipeg Jet come the start of the season.
You guys, this is my take on Evander Kane, and I we've said it before. You know, talent-wise, he's up. He's in the elite, mm-hmm. and I think he has the potential to maybe even be a 50-goal scorer. And you know, the rumors and the speculation about Evander Kane and how badly he wants to stay in Winnipeg. You'd have to ask Evander Kane that. He's the only guy that can tell you that. All this other stuff is speculation.
Right.
But hopefully, because he's such a talent, the Jets are able to sign him to a contract that works for both parties, because he's a fantastic hockey player. And, you know, things got a lot better for him. You know, he had a rough time earlier in the season, and things got better for him. But, you know, as far as, you know, whether he wants to play, you got to ask him. No, you can't answer that question for someone else. If he says that he doesn't want to play here, which he hasn't, you know, then you can address that. But as far as
or his agent, one of the two,
His agent, and as far as the
Craig
speculation in the media, I doubt that it's true. I it's tough to form an opinion on something that's potentially not true or made up.
Exactly right. There's our insight into that situation. Take our opinion for what it's worth. Take the initial report from Ren Lavoie for what it's worth. Make your own evaluations. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be coming right back with more draft talk on TSN 1290.
We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Just past 2 o'clock in the third hour so far today. We've had Craig Button on, as well as Grant Saunier. Kyle Kozier's coming up here in a second. Kyle Kozier, our Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. And then at the bottom of the hour, I like how they talk top and bottom of the hour.
Yep.
Bottom of the hour, Hockey Prospectus scout Corey Pronman. So we're looking at prospectus from every angle right now. Drew's in the other room trying to make contact, see if he can get a little more on that Evander Kane story. He's back in the room now, of course. So, you know, I like hosting, but Drew doesn't want to give up the seat so easily.
Yeah, Drew's going to come back here.
I do like that chair, I must say. I left a voicemail for Craig Oster, Evander Kane's agent. We'll see if he gets back in touch with me throughout the course of the show. And if he does, of course, we will bring that news to you as quickly as possible here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Absolutely.
You know what? Well, we want to get to the bottom of it. So as opposed to just thinking about it, talking about it, and speculating, let's get it from as close to the horse's mouth as we can.
Exactly. Usually an agent speaks for a player pretty clearly like that, right?
Basically.
I believe we have our good buddy, our scouting correspondent here on Illegal Curve Hockey. Kyle Kozier is online. Kyle, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, very well. How you guys doing?
Doing very well. Thank you very much. You're on your way down to Pittsburgh for the draft coming up. You're going to be heading down for Friday, I assume?
Yeah, leaving campus Friday at 8:10 a.m.
Very good.
I'm ready to go.
You're ready to go? You got your players all scouted out? You got your scouting, you got your insight all ready to rock?
I got a list, and actually I've been lucky. We're running a development camp here for Veritas. There's been King Scout, Tampa Scout, and a Wild Scout, and a Flame Scout, so I had a lot of extra insight there. So I feel like it kind of helped fill in the blanks.
Kyle, you know, it's Ez here, and it's going to be tough to not be at the draft. It was a good time last year, and we really... I mean, not to mention the fact that, you know, we were covering the draft really...
Even when you allowed Ezzy off the leash, Kyle.
Absolutely.
I know, it was... Yeah, as soon as 6 o'clock came, we let him loose on Nicollet Mall here in Minneapolis, and it's never been the same since.
Absolutely. To get right into it, it's the first question, and obviously, you know, I imagine you've been listening to, you know, the whole show or part of the show today, you know, with having Craig Button on and Grant Saunier. You know, do you think that this it's you know, accurate to say that this is a weaker draft?
It really kind of is. Like, you know, in talking to the different scouts here, and we had San Jose's assistant coach was here, and then a couple guys from Abbotsford, and everybody kind of has the same feeling, is that, you know, once you get five or six deep, it kind of falls off the table. The Tampa scout actually sort of laid it out this way. He said he sort of feels that there's actually four different tiers within the first round, you know, so that top tier is only, you know, two or three deep. And again, that sort of, there's some fluctuation in terms of, you know, who people think fit in where. And then, you know, the second tier runs up to about, you know, seven, eight, and then the remainder is split into tiers three and four. So really kind of interesting, and not really, you know, you see that drop-off in a lot of different drafts, but I guess just how precipitous that drop-off is, you know, according to most guys. So that's sort of an interesting wrinkle this year.
Kyle, you know, previously on the show, we had Craig Button, we had Grant Saunier on throughout the course of the show so far. You know, and we asked them, you know, players that jumped out at them. Is there anybody that, you know, might be sort of a little bit under the radar that jumps out at you as being a guy that could really have an impact on this draft?
You know, the one, I guess, the guy that sort of has popped up recently is you know, Henrik Samuelsson from the Oil Kings, where he was, you know, outside of the first round, and then just in the, I guess, on the strength of a really, really strong playoff, has sort of snuck up into the conversation, and you're seeing in some mock drafts him going, you know, in that, you know, 18, 19, 20 range, whereas, it only feels like 3 or 4 weeks or a month ago, he was, you know, people sort of nudging him into that 29, 30 spot. So that's sort of not really a game changer per se, but that's a pretty big leap to make in the last little while too. So I always find it interesting to see how, you know, guys that watch people for so long, and then all of a sudden on the strength of, you know, sometimes just a few games really kind of elevate them there. So that kind of dynamic always is fascinating. So it will be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Kyle, Henrik Samuelsson is a guy that he plays for the Edmonton Oil Kings. We should mention that he's Ulf Samuelsson's son.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, he really shot up really in the Memorial Cup and in the WHL playoffs, and he, you know, he's a scorer, and you know, he's got some toughness. Does that concern you at all when a guy shoots up based on the Memorial Cup, or is that given considering that, you know, he's performing when it really matters in the playoffs?
Well, I guess we can go both ways. Is all, you know, especially with the depth of the scouting these days, is, you know, guys are followed, gosh, sometimes since they're 13 or 14. It's not like, you know, the old days where guys would kind of, you know, peek their nose in at the Canadian Hockey League playoffs and see who was there and you know, draft somebody. It's it's really, really in-depth. And so I guess it always kind of throws me, too, when you hear a guy that, well, you know, we drafted him because he had a real strong World Juniors or he had a strong playoffs. And sometimes that, it's sort of like a shiny new toy. You know, you sort of start to ignore the bad stuff and just sort of use a real small sample size to elevate a guy. And I think there's some danger there, but I mean, I guess it's always going to be a gamble. So that's how, you know, you want to, if that's your gambling strategy, then I guess that's your business too. So, but it is, like I say, it is kind of interesting to see how the strength of just like you say, just a short run of games can affect those decisions.
Kyle, what is the top 10 chatter that you've been hearing? Is there any guys moving up, down? And you talked about tiers, but is there any kind of chatter about what some teams are looking to do?
You know, the guys here, and again, this is, you know, talking about small sample size. This is based on conversations with five or six different guys. But they say that sort of the defensemen are really very interesting. A lot of the guys see, you know, some of the higher-end defense. And Murray seems to be sort of the top of the class there, but, you know, there's also, you know, Truba and Dumba and, you know, Cody Ceci and Olli Mäta and all those guys. It seems to be just a bit of a roll of the dice depending on what you like. So I think that is really going to affect that middle part. You know, once you get past number five, I think that's really going to kind of affect how the rest of the draft plays out, because it seems to be a lot of disparity in terms of who likes what there. Because there's, you know, if you read through some of the scouting profiles of these guys, it always, you know, you can put one profile behind another guy's name, and you think it probably still going to fit because it seems to be, you know, sort of two-way guy with some offensive upside, and that seems to fit the mold for a lot of these guys. So again, a lot of that's going to come down to sort of some subjective worth and just to see, you know, what teams made a connection with what guy. And I guess the guy that people keep mentioning is sort of creeping into that top 10 is, you know, Cody Ceci from the 67. So that's going to be an interesting development, I think, going forward here.
And, you know, we asked Craig Button this question, and we'll ask you as well, Kyle. You know, everybody wants to talk about in town, the Jets, of course, they draft number 9. If Yakupov will, of course, be gone, and Teravainen and Forsberg and Galchenyuk, if those four are gone at 9, can the Jets take a forward and not reach?
Well, that's the question. You know, it seems to be the safe pick there is a defenseman because, mm-hmm. you know, everybody seems to think like there's a good handful, you know, half dozen or more guys that of defenders, I guess, that are, a quote-unquote safe pick where, you know, you might not be getting that top pairing guy, but you might get a 3-4 guy that'll play for a while. So, you know, do you go for that safe pick, or do you kind of, like, say, roll the dice a little bit on someone like that, you know, you got a big body center there, which, you know, certainly can score, but I mean, there's the upside and the downside, right? So I guess it just depends on how you feel as an organization taking that risk.
Do you think Yakupov to the Oilers is a slam dunk?
I think it is. You know, even with all the talk, it just seems to be a little bit of, you know, smoke and mirrors here. I'd like to be able to pronounce obfuscation, but I can't spit that one out. So I'm going to say smoke and mirrors.
Is that a Russian player?
yeah, it is. Another guy, he's really, really, really off the radar. So, but you know what I mean? For them not to pick a guy like that, I think would just be really foolish. And even with all the talk about Murray and him going to world championships and stuff like that, you know, if they don't trade the pick, which I also think is unlikely, I think they'd be foolish not to take Yakupov there.
How nervous would you be about a guy like Grigorenko?
You know, I think that's fine too, but again, if they're going to make that pick, I hope they'd at least investigate the possibility of dealing one and getting another asset.
Sorry, I meant Grigorenko in general, not specifically for the Oilers.
Oh, my mistake. I think that's another high risk, high reward guy there too. You know, he had the issues with mono during the year, and again, you're talking about a teenager. You know, everybody sort of affected differently by illnesses, but everybody I kind of speak to thinks he has really the opportunity to be, you know, a dominant scorer, you know, a guy that maybe could even sort of equip the totals that, you know, somebody like Yakupov could put up. But again, there's a little bit more risk there, so take that for what you will.
Kyle, you'll stay with us through the commercial break. We got to head to one. You'll stick with us for another segment?
Yeah, no problem.
Alrighty. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by our scouting correspondent, Kyle Kozier. Let's go to break. When we come back, more on the NHL draft. You're listening to TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. And I saw a tweet from Carbone earlier today that if you're participating in the Manitoba Marathon, buy one pizza, get the second for half price. You just have to show your registration. Tomorrow's Manitoba Marathon, of course.
If you're not participating in the marathon like Ezzy, you can just get two pizzas.
Exactly. So the same price. Huh. We're still with our good friend, our Legal Curve scouting correspondent. He also works for Veritas Hockey. Kyle, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Now we should just mention that a programming note here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah.
We're going to be on air Wednesday filling in for Hustler and Lawless from 4 to 6. And Tom Lynn, who is the former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, and he's now the head of Veritas Hockey, is going to be one of our guests on Wednesday's show. So I figured I'd throw in a plug there for Tom.
All right, thanks.
There you go. He's standing around there with you, isn't he not?
Yeah, he is. We're just having the kids doing a little media training right now with Ryan Stanzel of the Wild. So just making sure they're not tweeting pictures they shouldn't be tweeting, you know what I mean?
Drew knows all about it.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody wants to see those pictures whatsoever.
Kyle, we have a question.
There's a market for everything.
Absolutely. Kyle, we've got a question for you. Obviously, used to work with the United States Hockey League. There's a couple players that are ranked pretty high that are from Dubuque of the USHL, and one of them has one of the hardest names to pronounce in this draft, Zemgus Girgensons and Michael Matheson. What do you know about those two players, and when did Dubuque become the hotbed for hockey in the USHL?
Well, speaking of hard to pronounce, I think it's actually Dubuque rather than Dubuque. But I mean, that could be a regional thing,
right?
You know, basically confined to all of America and most of Canada, but it may be just Dubuque and Winnipeg. Girgensons is really kind of an interesting guy. He's Latvian, obviously, and he sort of was pulled up by an injury. He was sort of had a season-ending injury this year. But you know, he's really a very, very aggressive player, like almost recklessly so. Has a lot of skill. He's a big guy, you know, just about 6'3" I think he is 6'3" if I recall correctly, about 200 pounds. Sort of one of those guys, a little bit rough around the edges. But, you know, you can see that there's a hockey player in there. You just kind of got to chip away and sort of refine his game a little bit, which is, you know, I saw another Latvian kid play at Shattuck this year. It's sort of very, very similar guy. Like, he really wants to do well and score and hit and fight and everything, but, I mean, you just kind of got to round that into form. So that's a guy that's, I guess, also a bit of a, you know, speaking again of Virgins, is a sort of a wild card in the first round. So depending on what people think they can do with them, I suppose it's going to be a big question mark there. So, and again, I don't think it was broke his jaw, if I remember right. So again, that kind of, you know, in your draft year, that's a tough year. You don't get to see him for...
That's exactly right. He broke his jaw.
Yeah, right. So, and Matheson, you know, really kind of another interesting guy too. It's just the USHL is getting a lot of play there, and Dubuque drafts really well. They kind of went really kind of heavy into Minnesota here, picked up a few good kids. So, the nice thing about the program is it's really putting out a lot of, players that have a little bit of polish to them. Again, he's only been around here for a couple of years, but you're going to start to see those kids, you know, pop up not only in college hockey but in the NHL. And I think the good part about Matheson is you always hear people saying it seems like he's a kid that's ready to make the step and play at a higher level. And so that's going to, you know, he'll likely figure into, you know, maybe that round two or three there. So it'll be interesting to see where they both end up.
Kyle, what do you know about Jacob Trouba from the USHL and United States National Development Team?
Another big hitter, you know, quick skater too. Got a good first step there. And every day I kind of talk to him. Really, really like to talk about his heavy shot there too. So another Minnesota kid that every kind of seems to think the Wild might take a shot on there. You're not super big, but certainly solid. At, you know, I think 6'1", 200 type of thing. And again, that was supposed to be also a punching hitter. And it seems that the development program there is putting out a lot of defensemen lately too. So it seems to be, you know, one of those safe picks I talked about there is, you know, being a guy that can play in the league for a long time. Maybe not a top-end guy, but certainly someone that's not going to hurt you and certainly will eat up a lot of minutes for you, too.
And you mentioned that team turning on a lot of guys, and a fellow defenseman on that team. Is it pronounced Brady Skyche?
Sky is what I always hear. And again, though, I hear new people talk about him. You know, you got him at Brady, and there's a lot of mumbling. You know, they get the SK out, and so it's I think a lot of people have heard of our unsure about that. The one I hear the most is Sky. Another guy that's more of a two-way type of player where Trouba has a little bit more upside. But again, sort of, you know, I hate to keep coming back to this, but everybody keeps talking about these safe, quote-unquote, defensemen that aren't really spectacular in any one area but are solid contributors and, you know, at both ends of the rink. And, again, interesting to see how they sort of develop going forward, you know, through the collegiate game and whatnot. But since it's become such a sort of factory for defensemen, I think that kind of helps them out in terms of draft ranking, too.
Kyle, one last guy from the United States National Team Development Program. It's a name familiar to hockey fans, Stéphane Matteau, who is Stéphane Matteau's son, but they spell their first names differently. Bizarre. But, yeah. You know, what do you know about his game?
Again, that's a guy that when you hear people talk about him, everybody always raves about how hard he goes from that. Apparently, just sort of unstoppable when he gets there. Likes to play a real physical game, bit of an agitator, and has good hands really, in close. Which people, not really like that one-shot score, but I mean, if there's going to be a rebound or if he's going to get kind of the dirty goals like a Ryan Smith, he's a guy that's going to get them for you. So interesting to see that, you know, most have him just outside of the first round, but another guy that could, you know, sneak up into the first round, if guys look at pedigree and if that's important to him, then that's another, you know, of course, another college-bound kid there too. So that's could be an interesting guy that sneaks up into the, you know, 25 to 30 range.
Illegal Curve's scouting correspondent Kyle Kozier will hear from you next week throughout our show as you're down in Pittsburgh for the NHL entry draft. Kyle, thanks very much for doing this afternoon.
Not a problem, guys. I've been doing some workouts. I'm ready to live tweet that whole draft.
All righty. That's what we like to hear. You can follow. Yeah. Be sure to follow at Illegal Curve for all the latest news from the draft floor, where Kyle will be tweeting from that and from his own personal account at ICKyleK.
Yeah, Kyle, look forward to talking to you next weekend, definitely.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Kyle. We'll talk to you later. Let's go to break. When we come back, more draft talk with Corey Prodman from Hockey Prospectus. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And the website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know him from Hockey Prospectus, Corey Prodman. Corey, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure. Corey, we've spent much of the last 90 minutes at least talking about sort of the top 15 players in this draft, and we're fortunate to have you on our airwaves as you have the expertise to talk about some of the lesser-known prospects, some of the guys who are going to go in the later first-round, second-round area. We want to start there. You know, if you had to pick one guy who would be a quote-unquote steal in the second round, who jumps out at you as that guy?
Well, there's definitely going to be some upside guys going in the second round. The guys who I think could be very talented but a little more of a boom-bust kind of players would be defenseman Michael Matheson, who plays in the USHL, Mark Jankowski, who plays in the Quebec High School League, didn't really get a whole lot of exposure aside from a couple of tournaments. Any scouts going out to see him. I like Nikolai Perkorkin. He's an overage Russian who played overseas, didn't really play a whole lot internationally, but I really have liked what I've heard about him, and I think he could be a very good value pick in the second round.
Corey, you know, the Jets have the ninth overall pick. We talked to Craig Button about, you know, who would be a forward that, you know, they might want to take at number nine. And Craig mentioned Radek Faksa. What can you tell us about what you've seen out of him, and, you know, why would he be a good pick at number nine?
Radek Faksa is a guy I like a lot. I actually have him 10 on my board. Just does so much well. Good skater, good puck handler, smart guy, big body, uses it well. But something that really stood out about him this year was how advanced he is, not only offensively but defensively. This is a guy who, for a rookie in the OHL, was basically, especially in the mid towards the end of the season as well, was basically given all the big defensive minutes. Like, if you're an advanced stats guy, you know, like, he was getting all the defensive zone starts, played against the toughest competition, and still put up very impressive offensive numbers at the same time. I think he's a guy who could be a great do-it-all player at the top level, and someone who could be a fan favorite, and someone who can actually and make the advanced stats guys like him as well.
Corey, goaltending. You have Andrei Vasilevskiy ranked number 63. That's the first goaltender you have
going off the board. What do you like about his game?
Well, again, I only have him that low. I probably think Vasilevsky and Subban will go in the first round. I just generally rank goalies low. Yeah. Vasilevsky is just a tremendous goalie prospect, one of the better ones I've seen in the last few years. You're very advanced in terms of his reads and just on-ice awareness, moves very well for a big guy, great reflexes, has the athleticism to make the kind of difficult saves, and still has that big body to swallow up pucks. You're really a complete package in net. Like I said, one of the better goalie prospects I've seen in definitely a couple of years.
We spoke about him with our previous guest, but we want to get your insight on him. He's a guy who's sort of been rising on some draft boards. That's Henrik Samuelsson of the Edmonton Oil Kings. You have him ranked 39th. What do you see about his game? What do you like? What do you dislike?
Well, actually, coming into the draft this year, I would have had him higher because he looked outstanding when he played for the U.S. under-17 team last year. But they kind of had a rocky first half, went over to Sweden, didn't really do that well, then came back to play the WHL, then kind of got going towards the end of the year. But again, this is a guy who's going to be a really good physical player, in my opinion. He's strong already and probably could handle his own if he was stepping into the AHL, for example, next year in terms of a physical game. Very good hands for a big man, can make plays. His skating is the one major issue he has within his game. But I think he's a big, power forward type of player who has some offensive skill. And that definitely has a lot of value in today's game.
Corey, you have Griffin Reinhart ranked 15th. That's pretty low compared to some other rankings. Why do you have him that low?
Well, I would also say, like, my list, especially, like, the, I would say the marginal differences after, say, the top eight is very small, so you could rearrange basically my 9 through 15, 16 in any order, and it wouldn't be that major differences. Okay. But I like Reinhart. I think he's, a big man, smart player, can move the puck well, has a definitely good skill level for a man his size, but I just don't see enough high-end skills to his game to really get him into that top tier, or at least into a top 10 where I think he actually will go. I just not buying in terms of high offensive upside. I think he has second power play potential. I think he'll do good in his own end, but I don't think he's a top pairing type defenseman or the kind of stud defender you would build a team around.
Corey, we know the Jets / Thrashers like to take centermen from the OHL, specifically the Barry Colts, Brian Little, Alexander Burmistrov, Mark Scheifele. Another guy doesn't play for Barrie, but he plays for Belleville, Brendan Gaunce. What do you know about him, and do you see him as potentially a guy that might go a little higher in the first round? He's currently ranked 25th, according to your rankings.
Well, yeah, he's a guy, it depends what scouts you talk to. He's a guy who has a lot of varying opinions. Some will see him as a for sure top 15 guy, and other scouts I talk to say, no, he's definitely a lower half of the first round guy. It really depends on how much you feel about his offensive upside. There's the odd couple of scouts I actually talked to who love him so much they thought he could step into the league next year just because he's a very smart defenseman, very strong for his age, good physically, great shot, has some skill level. Skating is his one major issue. Again, makes a lot of plays, good defensively. It's just basically the diverging opinion tends to be on how much offensive upside he truly has. I'm not convinced he's going to be a high-end top six kind of guy. I think he definitely could play a scoring line, but I don't think he's going to be a tremendous scorer, but he will be good in his own end. He'll put up an average amount of points for a second line center, and that's basically what I see out of him.
We haven't talked at all about throughout the show, Corey, about Pontus. Is it Aberg or Aberg?
Aberg.
Aberg. You have him ranked 9th at you have him in the top 10. The Jets are, of course, picking 9th, not necessarily meaning that he'll go to the Jets, but what do you like about his game? He's from the Swedish Elite League.
He was probably one of the most interesting prospects to follow this year, and also in terms of talking to scouts about him, because he was an overage player, didn't get to play at any under-18 events, got injured during the exhibition games for the World Juniors, he didn't get to play in that tournament, and then after the injury, when he went back to Sweden, whether it was the injury or not, his play kind of fell off after a great first half. And he's a guy who I talked to some scouts, and they would also say, you know what, I might actually look at him in the top 10. And then other scouts I would talk to, and I'd say, not even top 20, maybe not even first round. So it's, I think because of the lack of exposure, there's a lot of diverging opinions on him in the industry. I love his speed. He has high-end speed, high-end shot, good hands, tough player. I mean, his size is probably not something that can scare people away. I wouldn't say he's that great a playmaker, but I see a lot of good qualities to a game, some potentially even high-end qualities to his offensive game, and that's why I would have him that high. I thought he was very impressive in his first year in the men's league over a full season. And like I said, I think he's a guy who could be a wild card come Friday.
You mentioned overage players, and you know Jets fans have, I guess, an affinity for Barry with all the prospects coming through there and the prospects there right now. What do you think of overage player Tanner Pearson?
Well, Pearson obviously got off to that tremendous start where he was leading, where he just skyrocketed to the top of the OHL leaderboards in terms of points and got to play on the World Junior team. Again, I have him ranked 40th. I don't think he's going to be the kind of guy who puts up the kind of points he put in the OHL. I don't expect him to be a high-end scorer or anything, but a very smart player. He has definitely playmaking skills at the next level. In my opinion, he could pass the puck very well, has some offensive touch, has a decent size. Skating is his one major problem. I think he's the kind of guy who you pick. He'll get to the league much sooner than most of the second-rounders, and he'll definitely be roughly an average pro, if not slightly above average.
The most interesting thing about Tanner Pearson is that of all the different sort of rankings that we've compiled, everybody either has him at 40th or 39th. So there seems to be some consensus about where Tanner Pearson's going to go come the second round.
And that's rare.
Very rare. Looking at these lists, everybody else is all over the place. So I find that very interesting regarding Tanner Pearson.
Corey, another guy that's ranked, this is a guy who will probably go late in the second round or early in the third round, Erik Karlsson, obviously no relation to the Ottawa Senators defenseman. He played for Frölunda in the Swedish Junior League. What have you seen out of him, and you know, is he the type of guy that might go a little bit earlier just based on his name? No, I'm just kidding about that.
There are definitely a lot of jokes in the industry regarding him, and he basically saying since he's going roughly, I think, around where Ottawa's second round pick is, it's a little bit of a joke. Again, he's the kind of guy who played overseas the entire year, only really got to see him at international play, but I'm very impressed with what I saw with him. He has high-end puck skills, smart player, can make plays, still on a small size, and doesn't really have much strength. But I mean, he's the kind of guy who you gamble on in terms of the mid-late second, even early third, and he has a lot of offensive potential. I don't think he's going to be, another Erik Karlsson,
right.
But I definitely think he's the kind of guy who has some tools to potentially be a top six forward if some parts of his game come along well.
Okay. Corey Pronman from Hockey Prospectus, we appreciate your time. That's some great insight into some of sort of the secondary prospects that most people might not be totally aware of. Appreciate it very much. Thanks for your time today, Corey.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Corey. Corey Pronman from Hockey Prospectus. Really, I'll tell you what, this NHL entry draft, first of all, it seems like there's more difficult names to pronounce this year than any other year.
Lots of good names.
Yeah, lots of good names.
We didn't even get to Dalton Thrower, defenseman for the Saskatoon Blades. It's a good name.
That is a good name.
That's a good name.
Thrower.
Yeah, exactly.
What round is Ezra Ginsberg going in?
Probably one of the last.
Well, I'm not going at all. You did go first overall in the Jewish Hockey League.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's probably one of the proudest moments in my dad's life.
You also once did a fake draft where you went first overall to the Pittsburgh Penguins in your friend's apartment.
Right. Yeah.
What?
No beers. Have you not seen that video?
No.
Remus, we need you to tweet out that video of Ezzy pretending to be picked first overall by the Pittsburgh Penguins. It's the best video of all time.
I'm going to have to see this video because I really have no idea what you guys are talking about right now, but I'm very excited about the potential to see this video. Why don't we go to break? We'll come back. We'll have one final segment, rapid fire, cheers and jeers. We'll wrap up this whole show. A lot of programming notes still to come that we'll get to. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. One final segment this Saturday afternoon. It's brought to you by David Carr of Monopoly Realty. Buying and selling a house is one of the most important decisions you will have to make in life. Don't leave that decision to an amateur. Make it stress-free by getting in touch with David Carr of Monopoly Realty. David Carr can be reached at 230-6129. That's David Carr of Monopoly Realty, 230-6129.
Give him a call. In the market, give him a call.
Yep,
that's right.
David's a good friend
of ours.
Speaking
of getting into the market, just want to see your options. David Carr is the guy you got to get in touch with. He makes it, I mean, it's stressful enough without, you know, doing it yourself or not sure about the real estate agent. It might be a little sketchy. David is the top-notch professional.
Tell him he sent you.
That's right. Say that you heard it from the Illegal Curve guys.
Tell him Drew sent you, he'll treat you better. If you tell him as he sent you, he'll run away.
There's some truth to that statement there. We'll leave that for another day and time, I guess.
I'm a joke.
You're not quite a joke, but...
I'm a joke.
I wouldn't go that far. That's a little insulting.
You texted me yesterday, I'm a joke, but that was when you were impaired at 6 o'clock p.m.
Well, he texted me at 5 o'clock and said, I just did 3 shots of Patron.
Yep, so I got the same text.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's... that at that point in time, all bets were off for Ezzy for the rest of the night. We were glad you were able to make it here by noon.
Let me tell you, Ezzy sobered up, came to hockey, played one of his best games.
Really? Are you sure he was sober then?
Cross ice pass?
You know... I love how we're bringing this up on air. You know what? I'm going to call a hustler, and you know, somebody has to party on behalf of a Legal Curve.
I agree.
That's true.
It's got to be me.
I think it's going to be you, undoubtedly. I mean, it's definitely going to be you.
Hustler gets me.
Yeah, you and Hustler, we're blood brothers.
We go out at night.
Exactly.
No. Rapid fire.
The Tampa Bay Lightning organization, fresh off of winning a Calder Cup as the Norfolk Admirals, announced they were changing their AHL affiliate from Norfolk to the Syracuse Crunch. Norfolk will not be without a team for long, as it is expected the Anaheim Ducks are going to announce an affiliate agreement with the Admirals in the near future.
Yeah.
After proving to be one of the best AHL teams of all time, 43 wins in their last 46 games, did the Lightning organization owe it to the fans of Norfolk to remain as the Admirals NHL parent club for at least another year?
I mean, that's all business.
Oh, it's 100% business.
Do they owe it? There's no owing to anybody there. I mean, their success is both related to Norfolk and Tampa Bay. I guess in the future here, we'll really see who is most responsible for that success. But people want their own people in place. They want to be able to make money. And, you know, that's the way it works in the AHL. People swap all the time. You know, I mean, it happens all the time. I mean, Chicago was Atlanta, now they're Vancouver, because now the Jets have the Ice Caps, and it swaps all the time. It's just part of the way things work, and that's part of the deal. That's just the way it is.
It really must be difficult to breed real fan support and loyalty if you're getting new. I mean, the Norfolk team's going to be completely different.
It's absolutely true. And like when you're in Winnipeg with the Manitoba Moose, you had always Vancouver, and then you'd have people. Teams lending you players, but you'd always be Vancouver, and that continuity is imperative to, I think, building fan loyalty.
Right, and the VP of the Norfolk Admirals, obviously the assistant GM of the Lightning, Julian Briesbach, said, like you said, it was cut down on cost and bus travel, and you know that's a factor. Obviously, they had a remarkable run this year, winning the Calder Cup, and you know they gave the St. John's Ice Caps a lot of problems. But I mean, a business decision had to be made. Obviously, you know things were going very well, and Norfolk looks like they're going to be a good team again next year. But again, those tough decisions have to be made, and you know Julian Brisebois and Stevie Y obviously together made that decision, and kind of that's the way it is, right?
Sort of one of those bizarre situations that you would only see in the AHL come to fruition, but a little odd for a fan of the Norfolk Admirals,
especially
that's for sure.
So soon after. Well, but I guess they have to get the wheels in motion.
Well,
literally, I
mean, exactly. You don't have enough time to move the team and everything else. Moving on, Brian Cranford, a volunteer coach with Mount Pearl, a junior B team in Newfoundland, has been suspended for all of next season and fined $2,000 because his team missed the opening ceremony of a local hockey tournament. The players missed the opening ceremonies, not due to protest or some sort of objection to anything. They missed, rather, because they were in the midst of studying for university exams.
Not only that, it was appealed, and they lost the appeal.
You haven't let me get to the question
yet.
Cranford's initial appeal has been denied by Hockey Newfoundland and Labrador, but is now going to be heard by Hockey Canada. Pretend you're the devil's advocate and provide one justifiable reason for the suspension and fine not to be rescinded by Hockey Canada.
I honestly, in this case, I don't have one.
I can't find one. And you know what? I love Newfoundland. And obviously, St. John's is the Winnipeg.
Why do you love Newfoundland?
Who cares?
You've never even been there before.
Well, I like Newfoundland. It's
why?
Nice
why do you like it?
I like it because...
You haven't been further east than Montreal.
Yeah.
That's pretty east.
No,
yeah, but you haven't
not
been
really.
Actually,
than that.
I've been to further places on my trip. I'm a traveler.
Why do you like Newfoundland, though?
It's nice.
You haven't been there before.
It looks nice, and I mean, obviously, St. John's.
From the postcard somebody sent you there from like 94?
What does that have to do with the hockey decision?
Okay, fine. I can't love a province, even though I haven't been there.
I'll tell you what, you got in trouble for saying it was a huge win for the Bombers in the exhibition game over Montreal.
I think every win from a Winnipeg sports team is huge. I love it. Anyways.
Is it true that the Bombers are going to be playing the first game at the Winnipeg Arena?
Yeah, pull a park. But you know,
Drew was a kid, they played on Osborne.
As far as
that joke earlier this week.
As far as Hockey Newfoundland goes, they made this. I mean, this team, obviously, the kids on this team were studying for exams, and unfortunately, I mean, I don't know where they get a year and a fine for this. I mean, the guy was looking out for the best interests of his teammate, his players, and I support him. And
good
I think,
to see they value education.
Yeah, I think that this is the wrong decision.
Because, none of those players will be in the NHL, probably.
Well, they're junior B players in Newfoundland. I mean, Newfoundland has had, what, one, NHLer?
I like Newfoundland. It's nice.
Well, you deserve that one. Come on. You can't say things like that and not expect us. You haven't been to Newfoundland.
I didn't say I had been to Newfoundland.
What about Labrador?
I love every province in Canada.
Maybe once you took
I love our territories as well.
Once you take a Labrador Retriever for a walk.
It's almost the same thing. With the 2013 Winter Classic between the Maple Leafs and the Red Wings set for Michigan Stadium.
It's going to be lots of fun.
There was much,
the big house.
There was much trepidation among potential attendees. Not traffic jams, not frigid weather. That wasn't the concern. No. Rather, it was the potential inability to purchase an alcoholic beverage at the game that had people worried.
Well, I'm for sure going now.
Fortunately, the Michigan State Legislature has passed a law allowing for the consumption of alcohol at Michigan Stadium.
Hallelujah.
That one day. Normally, you can't drink there, so now that one day, you will be able to drink at Michigan Stadium. If you were sitting outside on New Year's Day watching a hockey game, what would your choice of alcoholic beverage be?
Wouldn't it be like Bailey's with Bailey's in your coffee?
I'm asking you. You don't have to ask
me. I guess
me.
I'm not somebody who drinks that, but I would assume that you want to be warm. You get a, I guess. I guess I think we'd just go for the cold hard beer.
No, but we have another alcohol related question coming up, or topic. But you know what, Drew? You know, you got married in Kentucky. I think I'd like to have a nice little bourbon on the rocks. I really became a bourbon fan in Kentucky.
There you go. See, you can say Kentucky is beautiful. You've been there.
Well, I'm going to go to Newfoundland. I'm going to contact Tourism Newfoundland, and maybe they can put me up in a nice hotel and maybe show me the nice time on the rock.
Last question in rapid fire. Upon winning the Stanley Cup earlier this week, Los Angeles Kings trainer Peter DeMers cracked open a beer and drank it out of the Stanley Cup. The only reason awesome. This is newsworthy is because this was an 18-year-old beer that DeMers had saved from the Kings' last Stanley Cup appearance in 1993.
If the other DeMers didn't sneak into the locker room, maybe they would have had an illegal curve and they would have won the cup.
Well done there, Richard.
What kind of beer was it?
I don't know.
I'll tell you this, Drew, before I even get to the question. There's been far worse things than that Stanley Cup. They better be cleaning that properly. We've heard some stories.
Well, you saw there's a picture of Dustin Brown's kids drinking chocolate milk out of it earlier this week. I know there's been worse
than that.
That's
hilarious. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of bad things there, no doubt about that. If you had to pick one brand of beer to drink out of the Stanley Cup 18 years after initial purchase, what brand of beer would you select?
Stone Cold.
That's a good one. It's funny, Drew, I read this question that you sent out in the show plan. I actually have, I picked two. I know you only want one.
I'm willing to give you some creative license.
Okay. Remember Red Dog beer? Remember back in the day, the Red Dog beer was the Red Dog, obviously, and there was those commercials and all that. So I would pick Red Dog. And then just because of how good those commercials were, remember Labatt Ice beer? Remember those commercials, Labatt Ice beer? Remember they had
like
the Russian guy,
ice?
The Russian guy when he'd kind of wear the black kind of trench coat thing, and he remember Google YouTube Labatt Ice beer commercials from the mid-90s.
I'm too busy YouTubing the time you were drafted by the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Okay, well,
the best video ever.
I would do Red Dog or Labatt Ice beer.
Okay, good answers there. Good answers.
And by the way, I have recently cracked open a 15-year-old Red Dog beer. So
again, I'm not putting anything past you whatsoever.
And you didn't win anything.
Yeah.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Cheers and Jeers this week is brought to you by the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. I was just there earlier this week. Some great new TVs in addition to they have the two huge projector screens. They just got a couple just gorgeous TVs with the new renovation. Yep. The place in Osborne Village to catch any games, be it Bomber games this year, Jets games next year, whatever it may be. The Cheer Bar and Grill is your home for the best in sports coverage, conveniently located in the heart of Osborne Village. Richard Pollock?
It feels like the Stanley Cup final was decided weeks ago now. I'm going to give my cheer to Willie Mitchell. I know we've been talking a lot about concussion problems in the National Hockey League, and Willie Mitchell had to deal with his own concussion problems, so much so that we weren't sure if you could even give him more than a one-year contract because his issues were such that it was risky to do something like that. He wins a cup. He's a steady force on the Kings' blue line, played power play, played every situation. A guy who's paid his dues through three systems on his fourth system now, and one of the class acts Guys like that don't get enough attention. I think it's nice to see a guy like that return from concussion, not have the issues anymore, and hoist the cup.
Does he?
I'm going to cheer Patrick Burke, and you know he was on the show obviously earlier in the show, but I'm going to cheer Patrick Burke and Brian Burke and the You Can Play Project. I think it's a real important issue, and I think they're doing a fantastic job, and they're getting the message out there. And Tanner Glass and Dustin Byfuglien have obviously been in the last public service announcement, but you know, great on the Burke family and this initiative. It's a great way to honor Brendan Burke. And I think, you know, again, it's an important issue, and you know, they're doing a fantastic job at getting that message out.
Well said. I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers this week. I'm going to cheer the NHLPA. Their Beardathon promotion, which involves players growing their playoff beards, raised over $115,000this playoffs for the Heart and Stroke Foundation. In addition to the NHLPA, they opened it up to the public, and I'll give a shout-out to 38-year-old Torontonian Jason Fabreau. He recently underwent heart surgery. He raised $8,343 by himself to help support this worthy cause.
Great cause.
So, you know, congratulations to Jason, everybody who participated, and all the NHLers who signed up for the NHLPA playoff beardathon that just concluded with the Stanley Cup final.
Now, was Matt Leibel's beard automatically entered into that?
I was thinking about that.
I'm not 100% sure about that, but I'm in a little bit of a dispute with Matt Leibel, so we won't be mentioning his name.
Why?
He took a shot at me on the morning show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What was it?
I think he made up some sort of story about how I did something, how I cheated in a fantasy baseball draft once.
You probably deserved it, though, Drew.
No, it was completely made up.
Says the guy who traded Clayton Kershaw for a AAA guy and a guy he dropped 3 weeks later.
Exactly right. So, I mean, I look at the source on the insult, and I wasn't too worried. But I did threaten by saying I was going to make a beard skin rug. I thought that was pretty good.
Looks like there's trouble in paradise.
It's funny, because Ezzy's making a beer skin rug.
Yeah, exactly. Beer skin, beard skin, it's all a matter of the pronunciation.
That's awesome.
That's it for this week's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A programming note, Wednesday, 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock, we're taking over Hustler and Lawless, so be sure to tune in then. And, of course, next Saturday, we're back at our normal time, noon to 3. Extensive coverage of the NHL draft. Big thank you to Kyle Kozier. He's our scouting correspondent. He'll be in Pittsburgh, so you'll hear from him. Big thank you to Patrick Burke from the You Can Play organization, Craig Button from TSN, Grant Saunier. It rhymed with Messier. So he's with ESPN Insider, and Corey Prodman of Hockey Prospectus. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website, of course, is www.illegalcurve.com. Thank you to Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, and producer Tim. I'm Drew Mandel. Until next Saturday, this has been the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.